So, Property Magicians, welcome to a bonus segment of the Property Magicians podcast. We also have a video of this. If you're listening to it, we'll put it up on YouTube, share it on Facebook. But we brought our guest, who is on episode 35, Stuart Shepherd, back because we've been getting so many questions about a particular topic around refinancing, and we realized that we didn't cover this on his podcast, on his podcast episode. So thank you, Stuart, for showing up to do this bonus, and thank you, Mizo, as well.
Hi there, Stuart. Welcome to the podcast extension. This is a first for us, but when an issue has been brought up many times, we set up the podcast for exactly the reason that it is set up. Let it educate, let it inform without using hearsay. So thank you again for being gracious and allowing us your time.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Let's just start off with this question because it keeps coming up and it bothers new property investors. Stuart, what is refinance? And is it the same thing as re-advance? Are they the same thing?
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Part of the trouble with the banks is they have lots of jargon. So we need to try and get around all of that. If you think of maybe if there's a home loan in place and maybe the loan was for 500,000 as an example, so you borrowed 500,000, so I'll use my hand. So you went from here, nil to 500,000. If you think of it as being like an army that's marching, they've marched to 500,000 and they've repaid some of that loan. So now they owe 400,000. They are able to go back to that 500,000 if they can afford it. And what happens is that's called a re-advance because you were here, you came back to here, and you marched forward back, you re-advanced to where you were again.
Okay. All right.
If you had 500,000 and you said, okay, I've paid back 100, so I owe 400,000. And now I want to add on to my house and it's going to cost me 200,000. Then I need a loan altogether of 600 because I'm at 400 and I need another two. So I'd only gone to 500 before. So now I have to go further. So that's a further advance. So a further advance is when you go further than you had originally.
Further than the 500. Okay. Now,
and a re-advance is when you repay it and you go back up to where you were before.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
So the army helped us a bit. They're thinking of a military thing. Yeah.
Yes, that really helped a bit. Hey,
okay.
That made it. You made it so simple, Stuart.
This is why we have you back.
Right. Tell us about the refinancing. What is refinancing?
Financing of a home. Yes.
So normally when you have financed something and you then have paid some of it off or all of it off, and then you think, well, I need some more money. You can finance that thing again. And so you refinance. Now, what happens very often is people buy a property and they say, I'm going to buy it and I need a loan. So they always seem to think that you can get a home loan or a bond if you're buying a house. But you could actually have built a house slowly and built it for cash. And it might have taken you a couple of years and you built one room and another room and another room and eventually you've got this big house that's been built and you've never had a bond.
Right.
You can still finance that property because it's an unbonded property. It's owned by you. So there's no transfer duty involved or transfer costs because it's already in your name, but you can arrange to take out a bond. Now the thing loan is the loans need to be repaid by the time the person who's borrowing the money, who's the owner, is either 70 or 75 years of age, depending on the bank. So sometimes someone will say, I built this house years ago and it would be quite nice if I could borrow some money, but the person's already 73. So the person is now a bit old. So in cases like that, sometimes they say, well, you can't get a loan, but you were going to leave it to your child anyway. So why don't you sell it to your child and let the child get the loan? So if you have an unbonded property, you can range finance over it. Refinancing often is increasing a loan, and sometimes what people want to do is they want to move, and you'll hear them talking about a switch. So I want to switch, and the switch loan is to move from one bank to another bank. Now, if you have a friend or a cousin or whatever who works and sells life cover, what happens quite often is the person works for company A, and then he goes to all of his relatives and sells them life policies from that company. But then he moves to company B, and then he says, you know what, company B has actually got better policies than company A had because they're a bit more recent and updated. So he cancels all of the company A and he sells you company B ones. And then he moves to company C and he says, you know what, they've actually got some interesting things here. So you cancel company B's life cover and he sells you company C's life cover. And what that's known as doing is churning the market. So all he's doing is not getting new business. He's canceling some and getting new ones. So if you want to switch a home loan, because they're not, the banks aren't keen on that happening. You're right. because the banks are saying they don't want someone to move people around and churn the market. They then are saying that if you want to switch, if you want to refinance a loan and you want to switch from one bank to another, the person must do that themselves. They can't do it through a third party because they don't necessarily trust the third parties to be doing something that's good for the customer. They're just trying to generate a commission or something for themselves.
Okay. Let's stay with this refinance then. Mm. So you spoke about here is an unbonded house that I can actually take a loan against, or I can now finance this house, right? So my mother's house is in the township. How do I even know how much I can get out of it? Just take us through that whole process. So here is a never financed house.
Yeah.
How do I begin knowing how much I can get out of it? And what is that money that I can take out of it? Can I use it to buy the new sports car, or are there any conditions on it?
Okay. Good. Good questions. So... what used to happen is the banks would only want you to take out money to buy a house or to do something to fix the house.
Okay.
But they soon realized that a house was like a store of wealth for you. So if you wanted to buy a car, they'd say, well, that's fine. We don't mind. As long as there's value in the property and you can afford the repayment, you can take a loan against the property. And then you can go and send your child to university. You can go on holiday. You could buy a car.
But okay, sorry, Stuart. Sorry, Stuart. Just before you even say anything, go back to that and underline and bold it in italics as well.
Yes.
You said you realize your house is a storage
a store.
Of wealth. It's a warehouse of wealth.
Yeah.
Is that a fact? Is that how most of the houses are when they are in proper shape?
That's good. And that's actually why it's important to look after your house and to make sure the garden is good and the painting is done. And because if people don't look after their properties, then and you want to sell it, then the buyer will come along and say, oh, look, I've got to actually fix this and do the plumbing and do the electrics and paint it and fix the roof and the gutters. And then your house, you don't get as much money for it. So if you can look after it and make sure that it's actually your store of your money, it's a good investment for you if you bought it in the right place. Now, one of the things you asked was, if you have a house, can you always get a bond on that if it hasn't been bonded? And the key thing to that is that if the bank wants to give you a home loan, so you say, I want to finance this property. It has never been financed. I want a loan against it. The bank wants to be able to take a bond over that property. So you need to have it registered in your name. So it can't be the ground that the chief has now fenced off for you. And he said, you can have that in that tribal land. And so you can have that and you can build your house there, because there's no title deed to that property. So they just...
So the first thing is there has to be a title
deed. A title deed. Okay, but Stuart, this is exactly the problem that we have in South Africa, right? A lot of us have houses that are built in villages where the chiefs have given people are land and there are no title deeds, does that mean that those properties cannot be utilized and used to get more properties?
Yeah. So if there's no ownership and the bank can't take that title, then they'll say, well, that's fine. We know that it's yours, but you've got the use of it, but it's not actually owned by you. So it's if we can think of a block of flats, for example, that's a very similar sort of thing. Yeah. People used to live in a flat and the block was owned by a landlord. And then they said, we would like a bond on our flat. And the bank said, but we can't give you a bond on your flat because there's no title deed for that flat number. It's not in your name. You're just renting that. So that was why they said, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to sectionalize that and we'll make that section one, section two, section three. And then there was a title deed for each apartment. So probably about 30, 40 years ago, before sectional title came into being, you couldn't get a bond on a unit in a block of flats in an apartment because they couldn't take a title deed because there wasn't one. It was just for the whole block, but not for one little piece. And then they said, okay, that's unfair. So why don't we introduce sectional title?
Okay. Is there anything that is introduced? Sorry, Mizo. I'm just thinking of the village, right? Because what I've grown up seeing, and I am from the village, right, is, and what I still see when I go to the village, is that a lot of people put a lot of money into building houses in the village. But like you said, they are being, the land is being cordoned off or being given by the chief. What do you do in that case? I mean, people are putting in close to like a quarter of a million rand, half a million rand to build their houses. That is an asset. Surely there's something that we can talk to the bank about, because it means that a lot of people in South Africa who live in villages are now being left out of the property market.
Economy,
Yep. And certainly we deal with mainstream banks, and so they have no product that deals with that type of property.
I see.
So it's a little bit like saying, I've got a house with a big garden, and I can build a cottage in the garden, and I'll let my cousin stay there. I can say to him, you can have that house, but my cousin can't raise any money on that at all because it doesn't belong to him. I actually am sure that, or I would like to think, that there will be something coming at the future date where people realize, how do we actually make banking suitable to the requirements of the people?
The requirements of the people, Let's go back to the question then. So we've spoken about the title. Now let's assume we are now talking about township property, right? Where there is no mortgage, but the title deed was that of the folks. The folks have passed and it naturally falls to the children now, and they own it. They are the ones who pay the rent, rates and taxes. How do they know the value of that property, and how do they know the equity that they can extract out of that property to raise capital to start a property portfolio?
Okay, so that's a great question. Yeah. So some of the houses were originally like council houses where they said, okay, they'll take the title deeds and to the people that are the occupants. So that's now they own it. If that's in the name of, say, Mrs. somebody or other, and she passes away, then they would have to have an estate would be wound up and say, what did she own? And that would then normally be in terms of a will. And that's why it's important to have a will to say, who do I leave this property to? And then if it goes to her son, for example, the son would then, they would change the ownership of the property from the mother's name to the son's name.
Right.
So now he owns that property. The title deed's in his name and it's unbonded. So he now would then, if he says, okay, so I want to do something with that, he can apply for a loan. And the bank would always send an assessor out to have a look once he's applied to say, what is the market value of that property? But there's not much point in applying for a loan for a million rand when you think, well, maybe the house is only worth 400,000 or something, or perhaps it's worth 300. Yeah. So it's quite a good idea to get an agent, estate agent, or a property practitioner, they call them now, who operates in the area and say, can you look at what other houses in that area with the same number of bedrooms, the same size garden has sold?
Yeah.
And then they would say, okay, we think the market value of this property is 550,000. Then he can say, oh, good. So now I can apply for a bond on that property.
Okay.
And then he would need to know that he can afford that based on what we had said in the previous podcast of 31,600 for every million rand.
Here's my next question Sorry, Ben. So he's applied for 550,000. So that 550,000 is registered as a bond. Take us through that. What does that mean when I say it is registered as a bond? Is it just your normal loan, or how is this registered? Who registers it? Is it just the bank, or is there other people involved in there?
Okay. So when you go to the bank and you say, I want to borrow money, so now you want to finance that property. So it's not really like a refinance because he had never financed it before, but he's financing something and he's not buying it. And normally, if you buy something from a third party, the bank would say, okay, we'll give you the loan, and say it was the purchase price was 550 and you got a loan of 550. They would then say, okay, here's the loan. And then there would be a transferring attorney, and they would then say, right, pay across, there's the guarantee for the 550. And then when it's registered, the bond is registered in your name. So the property is no longer in the buyer's name. The buyer gets the property, and the seller gets the 550,000. Now this person has got a property that's in his name, so there's no seller. So now they're saying, okay, well, we can't give the 550,000 to somebody else because I own it and I'm not buying it from somebody else. So what they do is the bank registers a bond. They open a home loan account, and they happy to give you a loan of 550,000. And they make that 550,000 available and pay it into his check account or whatever. And then he can do anything. He can add on to that property. He can go and buy another property. He can buy another piece of land. He can do whatever he wanted to do, even start his own business, as long as he's worked it out that he's not going to lose his money in his business.
Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that money is registered as a home loan, and it actually gets registered at the deeds office.
Exactly. So, the reason why there's a bond is that the bank could actually say, here's a loan for you. But the loan, but the banks want to be seen as a preferred creditor. And so you often hear somebody saying, oh, did you hear about old Jimmy? He went out of business and now everyone's getting back 10 cents in the rand. So they say, oh no, what does that mean? So, well, for every rand that Jimmy owes them, he can only afford to give back 10 cents. So they're losing money. So now the bank says, well, we don't want to get 10 cents back in the rand. We want to get the whole rand back in the rand. So we want to be a preferred creditor. And so if you if you imagine a whole queue of people standing in a row, all waiting there saying, I want my money back from what you owe me. And right to the very front goes SARS, the tax man. And they say, what are you doing in the front? He says, I want to get all the money that's owed to me. I want to be a preferred creditor. The bank person comes along and says, what are you all doing in this queue? And they say, we're waiting for our 10 cents in the rand or 12 cents or whatever. And they say, oh, sorry for you. I'm a preferred creditor, so I can go to the front of the queue behind SARS. So that's because they've got a bond registered. They are seen as a preferred creditor. So they give the home loan. And then if the person gets into trouble, the house can be sold. And whatever money the bank raises, they don't have to share with the other people. They can keep for themselves.
Oh, no. That's painful. Mm.
Okay. Wow. So, Stuart.
Yes.
Stuart, I have to ask you, please walk us through the entire process of refinancing. Because I get it. There's someone that comes, they check, they evaluate the property.
So next
they
step.
Tell you the exact figure of how much the property is worth. Now I would like you to take us through the process of what is the next step. Now you've got this, where do you go? Who do you go to in the bank? What documents do you need? How long will it take for you to get that money?
Okay. All right. So anything to do with a property, you should first try and find a good bond originator. That's the main thing. And that person
and
would know.
And Stuart is a bond originator, guys.
Okay, so even this you can do it through a bond originator, I see.
Yes.
So your estate agent and the bond originator, again, they are in the picture. I see that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
In some cases, there are certain types of things that you can't do, but then the originator will be able to tell you this is how you should do it and this is how you get the best answer. But,
okay.
Oh, wow.
But if what some people used to do is they said you should try and extract as much money out of your property as you can. And their thing of refinancing was as the property price went up, they went and took more money out. So they said it was worth 500, now it's worth 600, give me another 100.
Yes.
And then it became worth 7, give me another 100, so then they owed 7. They borrowed the money up until the market level of the market value of the property. There was a debate as to whether that was wise, because if you got into trouble, then you, if you wanted to sell, you couldn't sell and settle your loan because people would want to pay you less.
But most
people nowadays, when they say, I want to refinance my property, either they took out a little bond and they put in a big deposit, and then they said, oh no, why did I pay such a big deposit? I actually want some money now, and now I've given it all to the bank as a deposit. So I want to increase my loan to get some of my money back. Or people say, I don't want to actually sell my house and buy another one. I've got a big piece of ground, but now I've got another child. So I need to build on another bedroom, and a little bathroom would be quite nice. So now I want to increase the loan.
Right.
So the two ways of doing that. So if we look at the building one, often the person would say, my house is worth, say, R1 million. I've got a loan of R1 million, but I want to add on a garage and a bedroom and a TV room. So I need another R400,000. Then what the bank does is they can't come and look at your house and say, well, it's worth 1.4, because you haven't built those things yet. So you give them a plan and you say, here's my plan of my house, and this is what I'm going to add on. So with this added on, it's going to be worth more than 1.4. I owe you R1 million. I'm wanting 400,000. Here's my quote. Here's the plan. Here's all the schedule of finishes, so that nobody knows what they're going to do. And then the bank says, okay, we're happy to increase the finance that you have on this property. So we'll increase your loan, but we won't give you the 400,000. We'll keep it. And that's known as a retention. So now we keep the 400,000. And then you build a little bit, and then you say, I've done 100,000. Can I have my 100,000, please? They send the assessor to have a look.
Oh.
And he says, okay, there's value. And then they pay out the 100. Then you build a bit more. And those are called progress payments. So, And then you build the house.
So the money that you use for refurbishment of an existing, on an existing mortgage, it's called retention.
Yes, so they retain it. Retention means that they keep it. So the bank keeps the money until you have put some value in the property, and then they let that little bit out. So they don't want to give you, so they wouldn't want to give you an extra 400,000. And then when they go and look and say, let's see how that building went, they find that you actually went to Australia instead and didn't ever spend any money on your house. So they retain it and they just give it to you in progress payments.
This actually brings me to the next point, Stuart. What about people? I'm just thinking of my aunt in the location. They are constantly renovating their houses in the township. So what about them who have been renovating and now they want to refinance? How would they go about doing that? Because now they've actually added so much value to the property. I see this all the time
or
in the township.
They think they've added.
Yes.
Or they think they've added, right? Yeah. That's a good one, Mizo.
Okay. Now, Miranda's actually raised a good thing, because what happens is...
That's true. Because what they do, Shane, they overbuild. And when you go and overcapitalize in a township that doesn't have as much value, it really doesn't mean anything to the bank. When those houses sell for 300,000, they sell for 300,000, even though the structure is worth 600,000 by now.
That's a very good answer.
That's such a good point.
The other thing that people do is they do something called a cosmetic improvement. So that would be like taking someone and you spend 500 Rand having your nails done. So now you're not actually worth 500 Rand more. You've just changed the color of your nail polish. And the same thing happens to a house where they say, I've spent 30,000 Rand and I took out my brown carpet and I put in a green carpet. So the bank says, yeah, but you had a carpet anyway. So you haven't added value. Just made a cosmetic change to the thing.
True.
Some changes don't add value. But if someone has an unbonded property and there's no home loan, and they've just been, or they might have a little loan, and they've slowly been fixing things. So then they say, okay, now I actually think I want to get some of my money back that I've spent on the property.
Mm-hmm.
They then apply to the bank for a home loan or to increase the loan if they've got an existing one. And ideally they would again come to an originator. We put in in the application, the bank goes to have a look and says, okay, you can afford the property, that the loan that you're wanting. And looking at the property, we can see that it's worth so much, we're happy to give you the loan. Now, the one little cautionary flag is when people build things themselves, they sometimes think nobody will know that I've built it, so they don't have a plan. And now what the banks are doing is they are wanting now in the Property Practitioners Act, they're wanting every property that changes hands to have an approved plan on the property. So when you buy something, you know that it's got 6 bedrooms. For example, all those bedrooms are allowed to be there. Now, if someone's gone and added on some bedrooms and they only were meant to be 4 and the other 2 were built too close to the neighbor's wall, the council now might say, well, there's no plan. And then so what do we do now? Yeah. So now we have to see, are we going to allow that structure to remain or are we going to have to get it knocked down because it's unsafe, illegal, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you might have paid for a 6-bedroom house. And when you try and sell it, it turns out that you can't sell it because it's not a legal dwelling.
Absolutely.
Yes. So when you build something, it does add value, but you've got to follow all the plans, process, and the rules to make sure that the value is actually allowed to be in it.
And to be careful that you don't overcapitalize on a property in a suburb that actually is not going to add any extra value.
Yes.
See what I have got? Another one that keeps coming up. I think I've seen it thrice now. So it is, though, perfectly acceptable to say, so the folks have left us this 3-bedroom house and you can borrow, what is the English that you use now, to bond that house, which was an unbonded house, right? To mortgage it. You are financing it and it had never been financed to say, I can start my property portfolio from whatever because it's in Tembisa and it is just worth 140,000. That 140,000 would you say, now that you know what you know about property, it's a good start to say, well, I'm going to use it to go and finance a new apartment somewhere so that I buy an investment property.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's perfect. Because what happens is some, and we don't know what this coronavirus and COVID-19 is doing at the moment. But for example, yesterday, F&B sent out a message saying that they are changing their loans for vacant land from 60% to 50%. So now they're giving a lower loan amount. And for categories of self-employed people, they've changed that to an 80% loan. So this changes all the time as the banks see there's a risk, a different risk attached.
Yeah.
So the banks might say, okay, we don't really want to give a 100% loan. Maybe we'll give a 10% loan. And that would then mean that if you've got a deposit, then you can go and buy a property where you can put down the 10%. So if, for example, you've got a place in Tembisa and you say, I can get a loan of 180,000, somebody might say, what are you going to do with 180,000? We say, well, I can actually use that as a deposit to buy a house. That will be, I can put down 100,000, I can buy a 1 million Rand property. Whereas if the bank's going to give me a 90% loan and say you can afford a 1 million Rand loan, but we only want to grant 900,000, then I haven't got the 100,000. I can't buy that 1 million Rand property. So my Tembisa house gets me on the ladder to buy property and to create my property portfolio.
Properties. And actually, if you buy in other B and C areas, you can even buy 2 properties for 180, or you can deposit 2 properties with 180,000. Exactly. See what that yeah. has, that has me so settled. Our listeners are quite clever. They've heard things, they hear things, yeah. and they are explained. I think they are explained over tea and lunch at work. Them off about refinancing, readvancing, retaining, and that retaining, and they end up thinking, we don't have money. All I have is just my folks left me a useless house in the township. And when you are trying to show people that the house in the township can either be used as a stepping stone to your next investment property, or you can add additional rooms using exactly that same house. It has got equity in it. And when you guys, and originators, speak about equity, and you can recapitalize, and you can refinance, you get us totally confused. You need to learn some Zulu and Tswana.
Not even. I think it's just using a plain English is also great.
Yes. Which is what Stuart does. Yes.
Which is what you just did for us, Stuart. It's that a lot of people don't understand that what refinancing is. And you just broke it down so nicely, you know. Because that's the thing. I know a lot of family members that have unbonded properties. And want investment, but they have no how to get started. They have the unbonded properties, and we don't see unbonded properties as an investment that we can use to get to the next level, which we spoke about. You guys, if you're listening to this, go to the Christmas episode. We talk about refinancing. So if you want to check out the Property Magicians podcast, you can just go to wealthy-money.com/podcast or go to wealthymoney.podbean.com. Right? Mm-hmm. I'll also have it in the links if you're watching on YouTube. I'll have it in the description. If you're watching on Facebook, it will be in the description of the videos. So thank you so much, though, Stuart.
But hold on a second. There's another thing that, we need to highlight that Stuart spoke about. It's title deed.
Yes.
You have to have the title deed for you to apply at the bank. The last thing you spoke about, which is why it's so important to have a will. We tend not to be in that because we've never seen our little matchbox houses in the townships as an investment or as part of an estate. We do not do estate planning. Yeah. So if you want to hear about estate planning, please go to episode number 6, I believe it is, Mayor, right? I think we spoke to Mayor in episode 6 or 7, number 6, for sure it's 6.
Yeah,
it's
I
episode
think so.
Number 6, because estate planning, even in your smallest, little small holding, in Ferienache, a little house, a four-room house in Middlelands, it is an estate and it has to be written down somewhere. This house is left to somebody. So that these kids can be left a legacy that they can do something about, where they can add a two-room and a garage and start earning money. But Stuart, this has been such a good extension of your podcast. But we really appreciate how you are able to break down the English into simple terms.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good.
Thank you so much, Stuart. And people are listening to this because your podcast is coming out a little later. So guys, it will be episode 35. We are right now, as we're recording this, on episode 34 this week. Also check out episode 34. It is mind-blowing. We have Nom Nebo on there. But if you're watching this before episode 35 comes out, Stuart, how can people get hold of you and talk to you?
Okay, so there's a good thing. So I could give you an office number, or I could give you an email address. So maybe the email is...
You can give both.
Both.
Okay, all right.
Both.
So the well, the office number is a Johannesburg number. So it's 011 and then 782-9945. I have a website that's 7 seasons, so that's www.7, so it's the number 7.
As in number?
Yes, seasons.co.za. And then my email address, my name is Stuart. So it's S-T-U-A-R-T. And then at sevenseasons.co.za.
Okay. Wow, this was so informative. Mizo, do you have any more questions? I feel like we've covered quite a bit and we're going to cover even more in the podcast. Do you have any more?
No, the episode is epic. I really, really appreciated the bond origination as a super, super addition to this, to the power team. So thank you again, Stuart.
Yeah.
A pleasure. I wondered if I should add something very quickly. Just
yes, please.
If you're wanting to buy a property, you know, there's an offer to purchase, and there's normally they give you 21 days to get a loan. And so if you have an existing house, you're not under pressure, and if it's unbonded and there's no home loan, there's no pressure to get an answer in 21 days. So often it's quite nice if you have an unbonded property, and then you say, well, let me start with my own house. And then when you talk to the originator, they can say, all right, well, you need to do this or whatever it might be. You need some pay slips. You need to make sure that that account is up to date. So you can get everything in order. But it doesn't mean that you can't do it. But you've got time to do it because you already own the property. And then you can start and build up a way of saying, oh, I know what I've done now, and it'll be easier the next time around. But
So Stuart,
so
they will, at the bank, they will ask for the pay slips. They will ask you to fill in the assets and liabilities form again, just like you would apply for any normal home loan. It's very important that people understand that. They will ask for your bank statement so that they can see a record of your salary going in or your management accounts if you are a self-employed person, right?
Yes. And if you're employed, so that's perfect. So you must look after your finances and make sure, so the bank will see you as being a perfect person to lend the money to, so that they know that they can get their loan repaid. We're looking forward to helping people.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. Thank you so much. One last question. Yes. If your property, for most people, sometimes if they are living in the suburbs and they've got the property in the township and they're renting it out, can you use the rental payments as instead of your payslip to prove that there's money coming in and the bond will be paid off?
Okay. So you can. The bank just wants to see that there's a lease agreement in place. And for the last 3 months, you have to have had the money paid into your bank account. So anything that's done in cash, so if someone says, oh, well, I'll meet you on the corner and here's your 2,000 rand and they give you money, the bank can't see that.
So. I'm laughing because you are talking about some of my family members here.
We've got our own economy going.
I'm so glad I asked this because that will be important. Sometimes people may not have a pay slip, but they've got tenants that are paying and they are paying on time every month. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
So very, very powerful.
That is such a powerful thing to ask. There was something else though, Stuart, that you said to me when we spoke to you. It's like APSA is also recognizing future rentals as part of your affordability assessment, isn't it? Isn't that important? If I say I'm taking out 300,000 out of this house to build two bachelor units on this stand, which is 800 square meters, let's say they've approved at the council, I can have two bachelor flats. I'm going to have tenants. So the 3,000 from these two bachelor flats is calculated into my affordability score, isn't it?
So what some people do is they're married and they want their house is too small and they want to buy another one, but they don't want to lose their little flat that they had. So now they need the rental income. So you can take projected income or future rental, but it's normally only at the one bank, and then they tend to give you a lower loan amount. So you need a bigger deposit. So what some people do is they say, okay, tell you what, I'm happy to live with my mother-in-law for 3 months. We'll let the house, our flat, We'll move in with the parents. Yeah. We'll put tenants in. We'll sign a lease. They'll pay the rental money into my bank account so the bank can see it for 3 months. Then I've got my salary plus my 3 months rental. I can say, put it in an offer to buy the house. The banks look at my inflated income now. And then you say, thanks, Mom and Dad, for letting us stay here for the last 3 or 4 months. And now we're going to move out. Yeah.
To our own house.
Wow, that is genius. I love that so much.
That's the magic of bond originators. That's it.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for this, Stuart. We tried to make it 15 minutes long, but we're going a little over. So I just, that's why I keep going like, okay, we need to end right now because we want to keep it short so that people can learn more on the episode, which we didn't cover any of this on the podcast episode because there were so many other important things to cover.
Absolutely.
So powerful. Right. So thank you, Mizo. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Have a fantastic day.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for this. Bye-bye.
Bye.